So I have spent more time on our service side than I have spent on my sales side of it, of things, to make it perfect. And if you saw our service process. Hey, buddy. Okay. All right. So thanks so much for coming on there. And actually, thanks for reaching out, first of all. I appreciate it. Right. Overall, I just want to get as many questions as I could possibly get answered for you. So why don't you just kind of start off about tell me where you are in your janitorial journey, and then we'll kind of hit it from there.
Yeah. So I've been at my company for 2 years now. We're fizzling out of the residential piece. We were doing residential and commercial, but now we're just fully going full throttle on commercial and branching completely out of residential. We're doing about, if you combine commercial and residential, we're doing about 250 a year. I have some subcontractors and I have 6 employees. There was a time I had 20 employees. But, you know, I dialed back on the residential so I could focus more on commercial. So I came across some of your YouTube videos, and I like your sales piece where you talk about, you know, hiring virtual assistants and focusing, dominating the sales. Because you said that was key in one of your interviews. Most cleaning business owners, they start off thinking they should know how to clean. And we think that's the most important one. Where we should be focusing on is the sales piece. And that's where I'm missing at.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you get to your 250 year?
Residential.
Residential?
Google local leads. I did a little bit of Craigslist. I did some Google ads, Facebook ads. But really, I dominated on the Google local leads. Now it's oversaturated. But Google local leads is what really propelled us.
Okay. So out of the 250 year, how much is commercial?
About 15.
15,000 is commercial?
Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty. Yeah, okay, right. So are you going to completely drop the residential, or are you going to just phase it out over time?
I'm going to phase it out over time because I have a lot of reoccurrence, but I'm going to phase it out over time and just focus.
Okay, I'm just going to take a shot in the dark here. Residential is too hard to scale, high turnover, picky clients, just too much work for the amount of money you make. Is that correct?
That is correct. I have to know the dog's name. I have to know the cat's name, you know.
Yeah.
Which is understandable because you're coming into someone's home, as far as if you, you know, some of the businesses we clean, they don't own the businesses, some of these managers, you know. They're not as particular as residential. You know, this is their home. This is how they like it. They own it. They want it done the right way.
Yeah, I've never seen, if I can be honest, like a residential company that's massive and that's not like a franchise company. Yeah, you know, right. Just the scalability of it is so difficult. The first 2 years we tried to do it, and it was the same thing. It was like I'm spending all this time trying to get these clients service is good, and they're up and down, and then they're with me 1 week and not with me 2 weeks later because they're going on vacation for 2 months, and just just doing the scheduling of it was just a full-time job in itself. Where commercial is a lot more set it and not forget it, but you can set it and scale with it, provided you have somebody good inside the facility. So I don't think you're making a bad call, but the transition itself is usually a lot of work. How did you get your 15K worth of commercial contracts?
I hired someone to do some Google ads for me that brought in some commercial clients, and the rest, I had 3 virtual assistants at one point. Now I got 1 virtual assistant. And we just cold called. That's it. Just cold called.
Why do you stop cold calling? Or are you still doing that?
I wasn't good at it. That's why I'm reaching out to you. I just, you know, just being honest, I wasn't good at it, because when I started the residential piece, Peter, I came in with the mentality that I can run this thing remotely, which you can to a certain mm-hmm. degree residential, mm-hmm. but I didn't want no parts of it, if that makes sense. I didn't want no parts of it.
I get it.
I just wanted the money to roll in, and that's when I almost lost the business. Remember I said I was at 20 employees and I had to drop down because because the leadership wasn't there, honestly.
Yeah.
And now I'm refocused and now I'm fully in it. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had up and down. So like, I get it. Okay. Let's maybe tackle, wasn't good at cold calling. So why don't you think you were good at cold calling?
Well, just, you know, looking back, you know, I should have probably monitored the calls. I just threw them a script and said, just follow this script and, you know, we'll get businesses. But I should have took more time to teach them how to, you know, navigate. You know, when you get some pushback, how do you navigate around that? How do you get to the decision makers? You know, sometimes we'll hit the secretary and they just give up at that point, you know. But that was just me just worrying about the numbers. All right, on to the next. And there wasn't no training in place. And that's where I said, and, you know, I just, because when I hired the virtual assistants, they came in with experience, right? So I approached it like, all right, they have the experience. I don't have to train them. All I have to do is provide them a script. But there was no training involved, Peter. And that's okay. Where, right.
Oh, dude, that makes more than enough sense then.
Right.
Yeah, so I think the biggest mistake when people hire a virtual assistant is they go, oh, I'm hiring somebody with experience. I can just put them in the it, and they're just going to do it without any type of training, any type of supervision. They're just going to do it. And I understand why you think that, because you think you're hiring a specialist, but you're really not. You're hiring somebody that's worked in a call center, that's had supervision, that can only do it if they have supervision.
Right.
So imagine hiring a cleaner, and because they have cleaning experience, you don't train them, you throw them in a building and you just expect them to do it.
Right.
Like it's going to go so sideways before you even know it. And it's the exact same thing. So any type of virtual assistant, so like we have a rule, every virtual assistant we have, we treat like they're an employee. So we have, they're on our morning meetings, they're on our morning wins meetings, they have performance reviews, they have training no different than a manager would have, or a salesperson or a cleaner would have. Like every single person needs to be trained on our culture, our values, and then job specific tasks, and they need a supervisor to oversee them. So when we have appointment setters, we have, I think, close to 20 right now. I want to say 20, but we're close to it. And for every 8 appointment setters, we have one team lead that trains them.
Okay.
And is responsible for managing them, is responsible for having them hit their targets, is responsible for tracking their commissions, is responsible for terminating them, is responsible for doing the final interviews after our HR department has done it. And it's a full-time job to ensure that they perform every single day. And last week alone, we did 73 estimates.
Wow.
Right? So that is the work that goes.
Wow. Behind. 73 estimates. Wow.
Right? So out of that, you know what I mean? 35 will show up. And out of that 35, we'll probably get within the next 30 days. Let's see. 9 new clients from it.
In 1 month.
On a low end. Well, not in 1 week.
In 1 week. Wow. Yeah.
So
1 week.
In a month, we're at 40. So we do about 40 new clients every month. Right. So we'll add 40 new clients. We're close to adding about $1 million a month on of LTV, which is lifetime value of a client. Right. So the lifetime value of a client is they stay for 2.8 years on average. So every month we add $1 million onto our LTV.
Wow.
Right. Now, did it start off like that? No. We started off with hiring three or four of them, working out the kinks, working out the process. And then once we had it dialed in, then we started to scale from there. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Okay. What questions do you have?
So what do you look for when you're hiring? Well, I'm in the process. I have 171 applications. I hire from the Philippines. Mm-hmm. So I'm currently going through 171 applications. I want to bring another cold caller on, but I want to do it the right way this time, Peter.
Sure.
What do you suggest I do? What do you do from the time you find your ideal candidate that fits your system and your culture? What happens next? All right, this is the candidate. I've seen their resume. I like what they do. Let's take it from there.
I'll give you our process, and then you can mimic it from there. We put an application online on Online PH or
That's what I do.
Right. Yep. Inside the application, we tell them if you want to be reviewed, you need to fill out a form. The form goes into a. On the form, they have to attach their resume and a video. Okay. So to even get selected, we would take that 170 people that applied, and we literally we'd weed them out to like 30 just by that process. Because my whole thing is, if you're not going to read the ad and follow the instructions, how great are you going to be at following instructions when I hire you?
Right.
So everybody always goes, man, you got 400 applicants or 200. How do you go through them? I'm like, I don't. I set a barrier in order for entry. They have to follow the barrier in order to get through. And then now I'm down to like 30. And then
that's exactly what I do. So I throw a little, the first initial application, and then I send them a Google form after they fill out the first initial application. But before they get to the Google form, I throw something in the application. Hey, on the Google form, I'm going to ask you how old you are. Make sure you put that you're 40 years old, right? So then I go through the Google form applications, and like you said, half of them don't put that. So no. I just wink. So
we make it more based on lines. Hey, send us a 2-minute video of who you are, right? Why you'd be a good fit. Why our company? And then they have to attach their resume. And then we go through those 30 people. Right. Then we have them read the script. We have them look at their background. So when we look at a resume, I'm looking like, have you done appointment setting for long periods of time? So if you look at it, you'll see like, oh, this person was appointment setter for 3 months. This person was appointment setter for 6 months. And I'm like, 3 months and 6 months is not a long time to be an appointment setter. I look for somebody for like 1 to 2 years has done it. I know that they could sit there and chug on the phone for like ever, and they're okay with it because I don't want burnout. So a lot of our appointment setters, like out of the 20, 10 of them who have been with us for over a year. You know, so I don't want to keep retraining every 3 months. Right. So we'll have like, let's say we have a training class of 5 people on a Monday. Out of those 5 people, 2 will make it through our 10-day training. And then 1 will make it 30 days after.
Wow.
Right. Like we have benchmarks in order for them to hit. And like we need a minimum benchmark of it. And we've got so efficient with it. So that was at the beginning. We got so efficient with it. Now, when we hire 5 people, right, 4 people get through it because we're hiring the right people. We're not hiring the wrong people.
So what are your benchmarks in regards to
sure.
Well, let me not jump ahead. So once you hire them, when do you throw them on the phone?
Day 2. Is learning our CRM, is learning our company, and I've created videos and everything for it. So that they just log on to Kajabi, and I've given them access to a free training program. And it's like videos for me. What's the point of the company? What our core values are, like what your job is. And then there's video training on how to use HubSpot. And then there's video training on how to follow the script. Then we have recordings from other people who've been successful doing it. And then we have recordings for other people who haven't been successful. And then we have videos on, you know, what your 10 days should look like, what the benchmarks you should be hitting. So that's what their first day is. And usually by the end of the day, the last 2 hours, we have a team lead sit with them and just PDR the script for 2 hours straight. Right. And then in the morning, we do 2 hours of PDRing in the morning just to make sure they have everything. We watch them use their technology, and then they're on the phones.
Wow. I love that. See, I'm not as, you know, I'm not even doing, that's why I said my process is I need to step it up in regards to that.
Yeah, I mean,
because that's where I'm failing, Peter. Right then and there.
Yeah, it takes about a half a week for you to learn how to build the videos and blah 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 and like do all this stuff, but then you never have to do it again.
Right.
And my job now as CEO is like all I do is I track statistics and metrics, and then I talk with teams. Like we have one salesperson right now who is, everybody else is doing about 25% close. This guy's doing 9. So he's been like that for 2 weeks. I've talked to the manager about it a few times. Now I've been sitting down with the manager for 2 days correcting this guy, right? Now we're going to write up the manager because we're like, hey, your job was to fix this 2 weeks ago, not 2 weeks later. So like my job becomes watching statistics, seeing a trend of a problem, jumping on the problem and solving it so it gets fixed. So numbers become like your whole job. They start to tell stories about everything.
Right.
You know? They just tell you where to look when you get to the stage. And then you spend your time where the issues are. But for you, you just got to build out the training program.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So you could put them through it. And then after that, you need to build out the script for what you want. And then after that, you just keep working with them.
Keep working with it. Keep adjusting and knowing the numbers. You're right. Because that's what Peter. Right then and there. That's the piece.
Yeah. You don't know what you don't know. So you're slapping them on the back and then they're not performing. You're like, well, why are they not performing? When really the question of why are they not performing is the exact question you should be asking. You're just not looking at it.
Right.
You're just not monitoring their calls, finding out why. Why is, and I never hire one. I'll hire 3 at the beginning. Maybe you lose one, but you're down to 2. But you want to start to see trends and patterns. And you can't see trends and patterns with one person. If I bring in, let's say, 5 people and they're all doing 125 calls except 2. Sorry about that. Amanda, can you grab my phone? It's Ava. Hey, Pumpkin, I'm just on a call. What's up? Just one sec. Hey.
I'm at like to school. What do I do?
You have to go in and get him. 5. Sorry, Amanda. Thank you. Sorry, daughter's picking up my son.
You were saying you got to hire 3. See, I was going to hire 1. I'm glad you said that. Thank you. That's a nugget right there.
So you hire 3 of them are doing 125 calls. One of them are doing 190 calls. The other one's doing 75 calls. Well, you look at that and you're like, well, why are 3 averaged out and why is 1 at 190 and 1's at 75? 1's at 190. The only reason why you can be at 190 calls is because there's something you're saying which is getting you cut off, right?
Right.
Or you're just giving up. Oh, you're not interested? Oh, okay, thank you, goodbye. Next call.
Right.
Right? If they're at 75 calls and they have no appointments and their talk time's not the same, so talk time's like, you know, how long they have been on the phone for. So let's say these other guys have been on the phone for 3 hours each that are doing 125 calls. And then this person at the end of the day did 75 calls and is on it for 1.5. Well, I could go look through their calls and I'll be like, oh, look, she made a call, it took 20 minutes. She made another call, it took 45 minutes.
Right.
I'm like, this person just fucking slacking.
Right.
Right. So you use the statistics in order to solve or to find the problem, then you do your due diligence and digging, and then you coach them on it.
Right. So when do you, let's say you get 3 employees, you hire 3 new VAs, right? They're doing the best that they can, right? They're showing up every day, their attendance, they're punctual. What will give you the red flag to cut them off based on cold calling? I know if they don't show up, they're late.
There's 2 reasons.
Okay.
So there's 2 reasons. One is after the 10 days, if they don't have a minimum of 5 appointments.
And you set that precedent from the beginning.
You set it very, very at the beginning. You need 5 or you're not going to make it. Okay. Wow. Period. The second thing we don't play around with is effort. So like we have 3 phases in cold calling. Either you're out effort, you're out communication, or you're out process. So being out process means like, oh, hey, you're jumping around in the script. You're not following the process of the script. or, hey, you're not making the calls quick enough, or you're not entering the data in. The process of what we trained you to do the job is not being followed. And then out communication is, you know, a client says, we're happy with our janitorial company. And you're like, yeah, we could send you some information. Like, you're not listening. You're not communicating properly. Right. Or like, you sound like you're just talking like this and you have right. no energy. So like, communication and process are skills that we could train into somebody. Right. Because, hey, okay, hey, we want you to sound happier here. Or, hey, here's the process we need you to follow. So those two are trainable. Out effort is like, it's untrainable. You know, right. they're, it's the person that's taking 45 minutes off on a call.
Right.
Right. I'm like, hey, you can't do that. Like, period. Right. Or they're giving up on a call. Someone is like, nah, I'm not interested. And they're like, okay, thank you. Goodbye.
Right.
I'm like, that's not a process. That's just an effort issue. You're not mm-hmm. trying. So out effort is when we remove people. So like, let's say I'm coaching them and they're like, no, I don't want to do it that way. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, this is an effort issue.
Right.
So if it's an out effort issue, we'll remove before the 10 days. If it's communication or process, we'll work with them to the 10 days, but they have to hit the minimum metric.
Okay. So when you say appointments, 5 appointments, it has to be motivated clients, correct?
Yeah, like, we have a classification for what an appointment is.
Okay, that's what I'm, yeah.
Like, a decision maker, with a decision maker, an influencer. So a decision maker is somebody who can sign a piece of paper. Uh-huh. An influencer is somebody, like, when you get up to like $1,000-$1,500 a month contract, the owner is not doing it with you.
Right.
Like, he's just not. There's no way you're going to get him on there. He doesn't give a shit about it. But they probably have an office manager, maybe a branch manager, somebody that talks to the owner and is like, hey, we need to change this. Can you please sign this? Blah, blah, blah. So it has to be with the influencer or decision maker. It can't be like with an administrator.
Okay.
You know, they have to have problems. They have to have a janitorial company that they already have cleaning for them. We won't even do quotes with people that don't have janitorial companies because they're like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I'll take a look at it. Then they always see the price and they're like, nah, I don't want it.
Yep.
Right. Exactly. So they have to have a janitorial company. They have to have problems. It has to be with the influencer or decision maker. For us, it has to be within 45 minutes of our a downtown area because we operate all across Canada, multiple cities. I don't want to take a contract in some 30,000 person town and then I got to find a partner there. It just becomes too complicated. It
becomes a headache, yeah.
So these are the main things that we look at.
So, Peter, outside of sales, you know, again, I listened to your interviews. Some of your interviews, man, you're inspiring, brother. You know,
thank sometimes you, very much.
You can
I appreciate
sometimes
it.
You can get going, and you sound like a more so like a motivational speaker. You know,
and I try not to get caught in that zone, but like, you know, I've done it for. I've just invested so much money into my mind, and I spend so much time reading, and like, it's hard for it not to just come out. Like it's very difficult for it not to come out. And it's also difficult not to argue with people. They'll be like, oh yeah, they'll say something. I'm like, I just don't agree with that whatsoever. Right. Because they probably heard it somewhere from a book or like on a post and they're like, oh, this means something. And I'm like, I think you're looking at that very one dimensional. But, nonetheless, yeah. So thank you very much for that. What else do you feel like you need help with?
The most important piece is sales.
Okay.
Sales, the cold. I want to hit the phones, cold callers. That's what I'm mainly for. Right now, we do have, you know, I have some people I hired from India that's doing my email marketing. We just started that up. Our warm emails is pretty much finished, so we can really put the.
Are you doing that with Insightly?
Sorry,
Insightly.
No. We're not. Is that a? No.
It's just a program that does it.
No, we're not using that program. Yeah. We're using SmartLead.
SmartLead? Okay.
I don't know if you heard of SmartLead.
No, I haven't, sir.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're using SmartLead, and we're just warming up our emails now. But, you know, I really want to hone in on the cold calling. You know, that's one of the main points I need to focus on and really grow in that area. Because, yeah. Like you said, the VAs that I had in the past, they'll bang out 150 calls. We're not getting enough appointments, and I just give up on it. You know, when our leads are probably great, it's just me not leading them the right way as far as.
Yeah, so let me give you just some, like, the biggest reason why people give up and the biggest reason why people fail is because it's an underestimation of efforts, right? You go into something thinking, oh, this is only going to take X amount, and then you find out it always takes more money, more time, and more energy. And then you're like, and you don't anticipate for it, so what you do is you go, oh, this isn't working, and then you run away from it.
Right.
And people do this all the time. They do it in relationships. They do it with their health and fitness. Somebody starts a program, a month goes by, and they're like, oh, what the fuck? I'm not in shape. I'm like, well, yeah, do it for 12 months.
Right.
And then tell me if you're not in shape. So what ends up happening is they underestimate the amount of time, energy, and effort something's going to take. And then it always results in failure in their minds. So however long you think it's going to take, times it by 10. And then put the time, energy, and money into that for that length of time, and then you'll have it.
Right.
So like it takes a lot of time. It took me to figure it out. It took me 6 months to figure it out. And if I would have had the information that I just gave you, it probably would have took me 1 to 2. But it took me 6 months, and that was 6 months of losing money. And like, I was losing 40 grand a month trying to figure it out.
Wow.
And then it was just like, we hit the angle, right? And then it was like, boom, we did 25,000 next month in sales. And we're like, okay, worked it. But it was like, tweak this, tweak that. And it was no major changes. So major changes make you start back at zero. Right. It was these, like, I gave you the foundation of what to do. Right. And then after that, it was like these 2% tweaks here, 2%. Okay. Let me just change this line in the script. Cause what I'll do is I'll monitor calls, and then I'll have like a script in front of them in myself. And every time they get cut off, I'll just put a line there. And then they do it again. I'm like, oh, look, he got cut off at the same spot. And then I start monitoring again. I'm like, oh shit, he got cut off again. So I'm like, I know I have an issue with him in the script at this point, or I have an issue with the script here. So I have to like change something to make it work.
Right.
Right. So everything is like monitoring, evaluating, pivoting. It's not monitoring and okay, this doesn't work, so I'm going to change it all.
Right.
That's where I see so many people. They give up too early, or they see something that needs a pivot, and then they change everything instead of pivoting.
Right. What I'm hearing, Peter, though, you know, what separates you from me, especially on the sales piece, is you're in it, brother. You are in it. You're paying attention to detail. You're listening. And that's where I have to be. I know in order to grow where I want to grow, I have to put the time in. And like,
dude, you're going to hate it.
Once along, but you got to put that time in.
Yeah, dude, you're going to hate it.
Right.
But you got to put a time into all of it. Like,
right.
I built out a service department now where we have 1, 2, 3, 4, I think 7 to 10 people. And I had to figure out how to get a ticket in. How can we, like, because we would get a ticket, we would let the partner know, and then the problem wouldn't get solved. So then we're like, okay, what's the issue? Is the partner not doing it? Or do we not really help him and give him enough information? So I have spent more time on our service side than I have spent on my sales side of it, of things, to make it perfect. And if you saw our service process, your fucking jaw would drop. It is like the booklet is like this of how to solve problems, where the sales one's like that, because it's very repetition. But the service one is like most people, like I did that podcast with Ricky and he brought me in for sales. And then we went out for dinner the day before. And then I was talking about process and he's like, holy shit, you know more about process for like service than you even do for sales. And I was like, oh yeah. Like, cause there's no point of bringing on 30,000 a month of new clients and losing out the back door.
Right.
You know, so like figuring out, because we don't have people that go down and view buildings. We don't have people that go down and do inspections. We have our partners do it all. So we operate right across country with nobody in these cities other than our partners, and they're responsible from start to finish with that contract. So like we had to teach them and educate them. And how do we do this without going in and showing them in person how to do it?
Right.
So we had to build these elaborate processes and out in order to educate them on how to do it. I haven't been in a building. Actually, none of my team, actually, none of our office team have ever been in a building that we have.
Wow.
So that was the most amount of work.
Peter, let me ask you this. Did you, starting your company, was it under a franchise or you grew this from the ground up?
Ground up.
Ground up, okay. Because I see a lot of guys and they talk about their company. I see most of them came from like a franchise. You know, it's rare that I see someone like you who's grown it massive, you know, from the ground up, you know.
Yeah,
and that's more inspiring to me to see someone that, like me, grown it from the ground up.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's, most of the guys that come from franchise, they started a franchise with somebody, or they joined a franchise, they realize that they're being scammed, right? And then what they end up doing is they end up leaving the franchise and just doing it on their own.
Right.
But the franchise taught them everything, how to do it.
Right.
But yeah, we did none of that stuff. So I just picked up the Yellow Pages and made a phone call.
That's my daughter.
That's more than fun.
Beautiful. Hey, so whenever you faced a hard time, have you ever faced a time where you said, you know what, the hell with this? What am I? I can do something else with my money. This isn't for me. Like a tough time. How did you get through it? We all go through those tough times in our business.
I've had tough times. Like I've almost went bankrupt 3 times making pivots, right?
Right.
One was 2 years ago, right? Went through divorce, gave her a buttload of the cash I have. We were doing $5 million. We were capped out at it. I couldn't get past it. And it was because some of the things we had in our company that were bringing in tons of cash, very profitable, but we couldn't scale past it because it was a constraint on the business. So I had to get rid of it completely in order to do it. So like I've had times like that, but I've never had times where I wanted to give up. And I guess the giving up factor comes from the fact that like it's the valley of despair. You're wanting to start something new. You're very, very excited, right? And then all of a sudden you become informed optimism where you're like, oh my God, this is going to be a little bit tougher, right? But like, I think I could get through it. And then you hit this valley of despair where you're like, yeah, you know, I think it'd be easy to start over again. But all you're doing is starting from scratch somewhere.
Right, right.
So I've never wanted to do that ever. I've always just been like, okay, I'm in this valley where I want to kill myself, whatever, right? I just need to figure out how to get around it. So I have a saying I always say to myself, if I'm as smart as I think I am, then I should be able to figure this out.
Figure it out.
And like, I'm not a intellectually smart, educated person. I'm a high school dropout, but I have a ton of perseverance. And if you ask my wife what my one superpower is, she's like, every time your back's up against the wall, you always figure out how to get out of it. And you not only get out of it, you come back better than you were before. So, no, I've never thought about giving up, but if you're in that valley, it means that you're probably 6 months to a year away from getting out of it and having a business and a lifestyle that you really want. But if you go back to the beginning, you're probably 3 to 5 years away.
Right. Wow.
So does that help?
It helps a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So like when we almost went bankrupt 2 years ago, like it was not like 3 months to get out of it. It took me a year and a half to get out of it. I cut my salary. I sold a house that I had in order to get the cash out for it. Right. Like I literally went broke. I was down to $5,000 left. And the next month it was like, oh, 15. The next month after that, I was like, oh, 45. And like, then it was like, we just spiked out of it, but it was a year and a half of hell.
What did you do differently to transition out of that?
We worked in an office before,
Okay.
So like we worked in an office. I had to get out of the office. I had to really review. I had to have a brutal conversation with myself. And right. I was like, I want to sell this thing for like $40 million in like 5 years. With the way I have it built now, is it sellable? Right. And I was like, no. So I had to look at the parts that were not sellable and I had to like cut them and rebuild them in a different way. But it was going to take a year to get that cash flow back where I was cutting something that gave me cash immediately. So, and I just had to make the hard choices. Like they were extremely difficult choices. And it worked.
Wow. That's
every day I sat back and wondered, I'm like, am I doing the right thing? And then you start to, and then we went 6 months losing like $40,000 a month because I'm trying to figure out this new process of how to do it. And like, it was by far the hardest time in my life. Then I developed a chronic disease where I had like 103 fevers for 5 months and I had to fly somewhere to get surgery.
Wow.
So like all of it was happening at once. Like every single aspect happened at once. And then we still made it out of it.
Wow. What's next for you, Peter?
$40 million. You know what I mean? So like, that's what's next. We want to hit the target of $40 million in 5 years. Tough target. I need to level up as a CEO because in order for us to do that, we need to now bring in high-level talent. That high-level talent is only going to want to work with a CEO that is also high-level talent. And right now we have good talent in managerial positions, but we need to start investing in people that are worth $20,000 a month.
Right.
You know, like $30,000 a month, we're paying them to be head of operations and head of growth. And that's how we're going to scale to get to $40 million like that. I can't do it by myself anymore. So that's what's next.
So how do you become a better leader? Because remember I told you that's what I lacked when I wasn't fully involved on the residential side. But what did you do? You said one time you had to look yourself in the mirror, look deep down and say, hey, I got to make some changes. I got to do this within my business. And then I remember one of your interviews, you said, man, I started working out. I started doing these things.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm really good at confronting the boogeyman. So like, I don't run from my problems. If there's a problem, I will face it dead on. I don't shove it in the closet, hope it goes away. I'm constantly reviewing statistics to ensure that our company's going upwards, not up, down, up, down, up, down. And if there's any type of down statistic, I immediately go and I deal with it. And also like, you have to confront the boogeyman. Like, and you've already confronted it. Oh yeah, I wasn't being a good leader. So you already knew you weren't being a good leader. So right. What is a good leader to you? And then just find the attributes of what a good leader is to you and then be that leader. Like it's, I know I make it sound a lot simpler than it is.
I know.
Right? So, but if you really break it down, it's not that hard, you know? It's just not that hard. It's just right. the daily work that goes into it. And it's your fear of failure, not knowing
right.
If I'm going to be able to do it. Like I have a fear next where I'm like, man, I got to invest in people that are going to be paid $20,000-$30,000 a month. And I'm like, that's a fear to me. But like, I remember having that same fear when I invested somebody that was making $5,000 a month in the sales.
Right.
I was like, man, that's a lot of money to me. I don't really know how to manage them. I don't really know how right. to lead them, but I just did it anyway.
Right.
You know, and then I figured out through time how to do it better and better and better. I just never gave up on it. I just pivoted those little 2%. And then now I am where I'm at.
Wow.
That's it, my friend. I have a lunch meeting that I need to attend to. Yep. So I'll let you go from there.
Okay.
If you need anything, just reach out to me over Facebook and I'll help you out.
I'll do it. Thank you, brother. Thank okay. you, Peter. It's been a pleasure.
And if you want my script,
again, oh, yeah.
reach out and I'll just give it to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, brother.
Hey, thank you very much, Matt. I hope this helped you out.
It did. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.